Chapter 19. Matters of Toe. Rand thought that he would sleep well that night. He was nearly tired enough to forget Alana's touch, and more important, Avienda was out in the tents with the wise ones, not undressing for bed with no regard for his presence, not disturbing his rest with the sound of her breathing. Something else made him toss, though. Dreams. He always warded his dreams, to keep the Forsaken out, and the wise ones, but warding could not keep out what was already inside. Dreams came of huge white things like giant bird wings, without the bird, sailing across the sky. Of great cities of impossibly tall buildings, shining in the sun, with shapes like beetles and flattened water drops speeding along the streets. He had seen all that before, in the huge Turangrial, in Ruidian, where he had gained the dragons on his arms, and knew them for images of the Age of Legends. But this time it was all different. Everything seemed twisted, the colors wrong, as though something had gone askew in his eyes. The show wings faltered and fell, each carrying hundreds to death. Buildings shattered like glass, cities burned, the land heaved like storm-tossed seas. And time after time he faced a beautiful golden-haired woman, watched love turn to terror on her face. Part of him knew her, part of him wanted to save her from the Dark One, from any harm, from what he himself was about to do. So many parts of him, mind splintered and glittering shards, all screaming. He woke in darkness, sweating, shaking. Luz Theron's dreams. That had never happened before, not dreaming the man's dreams. He lay there the hours remaining until sunrise, staring at nothing, afraid to close his eyes. He held on to Saeedine, as if he could use it to fight the dead man, but Luz Theron remained silent. When pale light finally appeared at the windows, a guy Shine slipped silently into the room with a cloth-covered silver tray. Seeing Rand awake, he did not speak, only bowed and left just as quietly. With the power in him, Rand smelled cool sweetberry tea and warm bread, butter and honey, the hot porridge Aiel ate mornings, all as if his nose were in the tray. Releasing the source, he dressed and buckled on his sword. He did not touch the cloth covering the food. He did not much feel like eating. Holding the dragon scepter in the crook of his elbow, he left his apartments. The maidens were back in the wide corridor with Sulin and Urien and his red shields, but not alone. People crowded the hallway shoulder to shoulder beyond the guards, and some inside the ring. Avienda stood among a delegation of wise ones, Amis and Bear and Malayne, Soralia, of course, Chaelin, a smoke-water Miagoma with touches of gray in her dark red hair, and Adara, a Nedershianda, who looked not much older than himself, though she already had an apparently unshakable calm in her blue eyes, and a straight-backed presence to match the others. Berylane was with them, too, but not Ruark or any of the other clan chiefs. What he had had to say to them had been said, and Aiel did not draw things out. But then why were the wise ones there? Or Berylane? The green and white dress she wore this morning showed a pleasant expanse of pale bosom. Then there were the Kyrienin, outside the ring of Aiel. Kolaver, strikingly handsome in her middle years, dark hair, an elaborate tower of curls and horizontal slashes, coloring her gown from high gold-embroidered collar to below her knees, more slashes than anyone else present. Solid, square-faced Dobrain, the front of his mostly gray hair shaved soldier fashion, and his coat worn from the straps of a breastplate. Marengil, straight as a blade, white hair touching his shoulders. He had not shaved his forehead, and his dark silk coat, striped like Dobrain's, nearly to his knees, was fit for a ball. Two dozen or more clustered behind, mostly younger men and women, few wearing horizontal stripes even as low as the waist. "Grace favor the Lord Dragon," they murmured, bowing hand to heart or curtsying, and grace honors us with the Lord Dragon's presence. The Tyrans had their contingent as well, high lords and ladies, without lesser nobles, in peaked velvet hats and silk coats with puffy satin-striped sleeves, in bright gowns with broad lace ruffs and close-fitting caps of pearls or gems, making their respects with, "The light illumine the Lord Dragon." Mylon stood foremost, of course, lean and hard and expressionless, with his gray-pointed beard. Close beside him, Fionda's stern expression and iron eyes somehow did not diminish her beauty, while willowy Anyella's simpers lessened hers. There were certainly no smiles of any sort on the faces of Marakan, a blue-eyed rarity among Tyrans, or bald Guayam, or Aracom, who looked twice as slender alongside Guayam's solid width, if just as steely. They, and Mylon, had been thick with Hearn and Simon. Rand had not mentioned those two yesterday, or their treason, but he was sure it was known here, and equally sure his silence was given meaning according to each man's own mind. They had grown used to such since coming to Carrion, and this morning they watched Rand as if he might suddenly produce orders for their arrest. In truth, nearly everyone was watching someone. A good many eyed the Aiel nervously, often hiding anger with varying success. Others watched Berylaine almost as closely. He was surprised to see that even the men, even the Tyrans, had more thought than lechery on their faces. Most watched him, of course. He was who he was and what he was. Colaver's cool gaze shifted between him and Avienda, where it heated. There was bad blood there, though Avienda seemed to have forgotten. Colaver would certainly never forget the beating she had received from Avienda after being discovered in Rand's rooms, or forgive the fact that it was common knowledge now. Mylon and Maringill each made his awareness of the other plane by avoiding the other's eyes. Both wanted the throne of Carrion, and both thought the other his chief rival. Dobraine watched Mylon and Maringill, though why was anyone's guess. Mylaine studied Rand, while Soralea studied her, and Avienda frowned at the floor. One big-eyed young woman among the Carrionin wore her hair loose and cut off at the shoulder instead of piled in ornate curls, and a sword belted over a dark riding dress with only 6 slashes of color. Many of the others did not bother to hide disparaging smiles when they glanced at her. She hardly seemed to notice, alternating between staring at the maidens with stark admiration or at Rand with stark fear. He remembered her. Salanda, one of the stream of beautiful women Colaver had thought would tie the Dragon Reborn to her schemes, until Rand convinced her it would not work. With Avienda's unasked help, unfortunately. He hoped Colaver feared him enough to forget revenge on Avienda, but he wished he could make Salanda believe she had nothing to fear.
"You cannot please everyone," Moraine had said. "You cannot soothe everyone."
A hard woman. To cap it all, the Aiel watched everyone except the Wise Ones, of course, and except Berylaine for some reason. They always eyed Wetlanders suspiciously, yet she might as well have been another Wise One. "You all honor me." Rand hoped he did not sound too dry. Back to a parade. He wondered where Egwene was. Probably lolling in bed. Briefly he considered finding her and making one last effort to... No, if she would not tell him, he did not know how to make her. Too bad being Tavirin did not work when he most wanted it to. "Unfortunately, I will not be able to talk with you more this morning. I am returning to Camelin." Andor was the problem he had to deal with now. Andor and Samael.
"Your orders are to be carried out, my Lord Dragon," Berylaine said. "This morning, so you may witness it."
"My orders?"
"Mangan," she said. "He was told this morning."
Most of the Wise Ones had donned a flat expression, but Bear and Soralea both wore open disapproval. Surprisingly, it was directed at Berylaine. "I don't mean to be a witness to every murderer who's hung," Rand said coldly. In truth, he had forgotten,
or rather shoved it out of his mind. Hanging a man you liked was not something anyone would want to remember. Ruark and the other chiefs had not even mentioned it when he spoke with them. Another truth was that he would not make this execution special. Aiel had to live by the law like anyone else. Kyrianen and Tyrans had to see that, and know that if he would not play favorites with the Aiel, he certainly would not with them. "You use everything and everybody," he thought, sickened. At least he hoped he had thought it. Besides, he did not want to watch any hanging, much less Mangan's. Mylan certainly looked thoughtful, and sweat was beating on Aracom's forehead, though that might have been the heat. Kolaver, face going pale, seemed to be seeing him for the first time ever. Berylaine divided a rueful glance between Bear and Soralea, who nodded. Could they have told her he would answer as he had? It did not seem possible. The others' reactions varied from surprise to satisfaction, but he noted Salanda in particular. Wide-eyed, she forgot the maidens. If she had looked at Rand fearfully before, now she was terrified. Well, so be it. "I will be leaving for Camelin immediately," Rand told them. A soft sound rippled among the Kyrianen and Tyrans, very much like sighs of relief. It was no surprise that they all accompanied him as far as the chamber set aside for his traveling. Except for Berylaine, the maidens in red shields kept the wetlanders back. They did not particularly like letting Kyrianen near him, and he was as glad they barred the Tyrans today. There were plenty of glares, but no one said anything, not to him. Not even Berylaine, who followed right behind with the Wise Ones and Davienda, talking quietly, occasionally laughing softly. That made the hair on his neck stand. Berylaine and Avienda talking together. And laughing? At the square-carved door to the traveling chamber, he looked carefully above Berylaine's head as she swept him a deep curtsy.
"I will tend Kyrian without fear or favor until you return, my lord dragon."
Perhaps, despite Mangan, she really had come this morning just to say that and be heard by the other nobles. It brought an indulgent smile from Soralea for some reason. He needed to find out what was going on there. He was not going to have the Wise Ones interfering with Berylaine. The rest of the Wise Ones had drawn Avienda aside. They seemed to be taking turns speaking to her, quite firmly, though he could not make out words.
"When you see Perrine Barra next," Berylaine added, "please give him my warmest wishes. And Matt Cawthon also."
"We await the Lord Dragon's return eagerly,"
Kolaver lied, keeping her face carefully neutral. Mylan glared at her for having managed to speak first, and made a flowery speech, saying no more really than she had, which Maringill, of course, had to top, for floweriness at least. Fianda and Anaella outdid both, adding enough compliments that he eyed Avienda anxiously, but the Wise Ones still had her occupied. Dobraine contented himself with, "until my lord dragon's return," while Marakan, Guayam, and Aracom murmured something indistinct with wary eyes. It was a relief to duck inside, away from them. The surprise came when Malayne followed him ahead of Avienda. He raised a questioning eyebrow.
"I must consult with Bale on business of the Wise Ones," she told him in a no-nonsense voice, then immediately shot a sharp look at Avienda, who had on such an innocent face that Rand knew she was hiding something. Avienda looked many things naturally, but never innocent. Never that innocent.
"As you wish," he said.
He suspected the Wise Ones had been waiting a chance to send her to Camelin. Who better to make sure Rand did not influence Bale the wrong way than Bale's wife? Like Ruark, the man had two, which Matt always said was either a dream or a nightmare, and he could not decide which. Avienda watched closely as he opened a gateway back to Camelin into the Grand Hall. She usually did, though she could not see his flows. Once she had made a gateway herself, but in a rare moment of panic, and she had never been able to remember how. Today, for some reason, the rotating slash of light apparently reminded her of what happened that time. Red suffused her tan cheeks, and she suddenly refused to look in his direction. With the power filling him, he smelled her. The herbal scent of her soap, a hint of sweet perfume he could not remember her wearing before. For once, truly eager to be rid of Cyadine, he was the first one through into the empty throne room. Alana seemed to crash home in his head, her presence as palpable as if she had been right in front of him. She had been weeping, he thought. Because he had gone away? Well, let her weep for that. Somehow he had to break free of her. His going first did not sit well with the maidens or red shields, of course. Urien merely grunted and shook his head disapprovingly. A white-faced Tsulin went up on her toes to put herself nose to nose with Rand.
The great and powerful Kar-Karn gave his honor to Farderai's Mai to carry, she all but hissed in a low whisper. If the mighty Kar-Karn dies in ambush while the maidens protect him, Farderai's Mai has no honor left. If the all-conquering Kar-Karn does not care, perhaps Anila is right. Perhaps the omnipotent Kar-Karn is a willful boy who should be held by the hand lest he run over a cliff because he will not look.
Rand's jaw tightened. In private, he gritted his teeth and put up with this, with less pointed than this, usually, for the debt he owed the maidens. But not even Anila or Samara had ever openly berated him in public. Mullane was already halfway down the hall, skirts gathered up and almost trotting. Apparently she could not wait to re-establish the Wise One's influence with Bale. He could not tell whether Urien had heard, though the man seemed awfully intent on directing his veiled Aethon Dor as they searched through the columns with the maidens, something they had no need of direction to do. Avienda, on the other hand, arms folded beneath her breasts, wore such a mix of frown and approval that he had no doubts about her. "Yesterday went very well," he told Sulin firmly. "From now on, I think two guards will be more than sufficient." Her eyes almost bulged. She could not seem to find breath to speak. Now that he had taken away, it was time to give back, before she exploded like an illuminator's fireworks. "It's different when I go outside the palace, of course. The guard you have been giving me will do then, but here, or in the Sun Palace, or the Stone of Tyr, two are enough." He turned away, while her mouth still worked silently. Avienda fell in beside him as he walked around the dais holding the thrones to the small doors behind. He had come here instead of straight to his own rooms in hope that he could lose her. Even without Cyadine, he could smell her, or maybe it was the memory. Either way, he wished his head were clogged with a cold. He liked the smell too much. Shawl wrapped around her tightly, Avienda stared straight ahead of her as if troubled, not noticing when he held the door into one of the lion-paneled dressing rooms for her, something that usually aroused at least a little ire, perhaps a tart question as to which of her arms was broken. When he asked what was the matter, she gave a start.
"Nothing. Sulin was right. But..."
Suddenly she gave a reluctant grin.
"Did you see her face? No one has set her down like that since... never, I think. Not even Ruark."
"I'm a little surprised to find you on my side." She stared at him with those big eyes. He could spend all day just trying to decide whether they were blue or green. No, he had no right to think about her eyes. What had happened after she made that doorway, to run from him, made no difference. He especially had no right to think about that.
"You trouble me so, Randolthor," she said without a bit of heat. "Light, sometimes I think the Creator made you just to trouble me."
He wanted to tell her it was her own fault. More than once he had offered to send her back to the Wise Ones, though it would just mean them putting someone else in her place. But before he could open his mouth, Jelani and Laia caught up, followed almost immediately by two red shields. One a graying fellow with three times the scars Laia had on her face. Rand directed Jelani and the scarred man back to the throne room, which nearly precipitated an argument. Not from the Red Shield, who merely glanced at his fellow, shrugged, and went,
But Jelani drew herself up. Rand pointed to the door leading to the Grand Hall. The Kar Karn expects Farderize Mai to go where he commands.
You may be a king to the wetlanders, Randall Thor, but not to Aiel.
A tough sullenness marred Jelani's dignity, reminding him how young she was.
The maidens will never fail you in the Dance of Spears, but this is not the dance.
Still she went, after a rapid exchange of hand-talk with Lya. With Lya and the lean red shield, a yellow-haired man named Kassin, who stood a good inch taller than Rand, Rand strode quickly through the palace to his rooms. And with Avienda, of course. If he thought those bulky skirts might make her fall behind, he was mistaken. Lya and Kassin remained in the hallway outside his sitting room, a large chamber with a marble frieze of lions below the high ceiling and tapestries of hunting scenes in misty mountains. But Avienda followed him inside.
"Shouldn't you be with Mulane?" he demanded. "Business of the wise ones and all that?"
"No," she said curtly. "Mulane would not be pleased if I interfered right now."
Like, but he should not be pleased that she was not going.
Tossing the dragon scepter atop a table with gilded vine-carved legs, he undid his sword belt and added that. "Did Amis and the others tell you where Elaine is?"
For a long moment, Avienda stood in the middle of the blue-tiled floor looking at him, her expression unreadable.
"They do not know," she said finally. "I asked."
He had expected she would. She had not done it in months, but before coming to Camelin the first time with him, every second word out of her mouth had been a reminder that he belonged to Elaine. In her view, he did, and what had happened between them beyond that gateway she had made clearly did not alter the fact, and would not happen again, something else she had made quite clear. Exactly as he wanted it. He was worse than a pig to feel regret. Ignoring all the fine gilded chairs, she settled cross-legged on the floor, arranging her skirts gracefully.
"They did speak of you, though."
"Why does that not surprise me?" he said dryly. And to his surprise, her cheeks reddened. Avienda was not a woman for blushes, and this made twice in one day.
"They have shared dreams, some of which concern you."
She sounded slightly strangled until she paused to clear her throat, then fixed him with a steady, determined gaze.
"Mulane and Baird dreamed of you on a boat," she said,
the word still awkward after all these months in the wetlands,
"with three women whose faces they could not see, and a scale tilting first one way, then the other. Mulane and Amis dreamed of a man standing by your side with a dagger to your throat, but you did not see him. Bear and Amis dreamed of you cutting the wetlands in two with a sword."
For an instant her eyes darted contemptuously to the scabbarded blade lying atop the dragon scepter. Contemptuously, and a bit guiltily. She had given him that, once the property of Layman, carefully wrapped in a blanket so she could not be said to have actually touched it.
"They cannot interpret the dreams, but they thought you should know."
The first was opaque to him as to the wise ones, but the second seemed obvious. A man he could not see with a dagger had to be a gray man. Their souls given up to the shadow, not merely pledged but given away, they could slip past notice even when you looked right at them. And their only real purpose was assassination. Why had the wise ones not understood something so plain? As for the last, he feared that was plain as well. He already was cutting lands apart. Taraban and Arad-Doman were ruins. The rebellions in Tyr and Kyrian could become more than skulking talk at any time, and Ilion would certainly feel the weight of his sword. And that was aside from the Prophet and the dragon sworn down in Altara and Murindi. "I don't see any mystery in two of those, Avienda." But when he explained, she gave him a doubtful look. "Of course. If Wise One dreamwalkers could not interpret a dream, certainly no one else could." He grunted sourly and flung himself into a chair facing her. What else did they dream?
There is one other I can tell you, though it may not concern you.
Which meant there were some she would not tell, which made him wonder why the wise ones had discussed them with her, since she was not a dreamwalker.
All three had this dream, which makes it especially significant. Rain,
that word still came clumsily too,
coming from a bowl. There are snares and pitfalls around the bowl. If the right hand picks it up, they will find a treasure, perhaps as great as the bowl. If the wrong hands, the world is doomed. The key to finding the bowl is to find the one who is no longer.
No longer what?
This certainly sounded more important than the rest.
Do you mean somebody who's dead?
Avienda's dark reddish hair swung below her shoulders as she shook her head. They know no more than I said.
To his surprise, she rose smoothly with those automatic adjustments to her clothes that women always made. Do you... He coughed deliberately.
Do you have to go?
He had been about to say. Lighty wanted her to go. Every minute around her was torture. But then every minute away from her was torture, too. Well, he could do what was right and what was good for him, and best for her.
Do you want to go back to the wise ones, Avienda? To resume your studies?
There really isn't any point to your staying longer. You've taught me so much I might as well have been raised, Aiel.
Her sniff said volumes, but of course she did not leave it at that. You know less than a boy of six. Why does a man listen to his second mother before his own mother, and a woman to her second father before her own? When can a woman marry a man without making a bridal wreath? When must a roof mistress obey a blacksmith? If you take a silversmith Guy Shine, why must you let her work one day for herself for each she works for you? Why is the same not true of a weaver?
He floundered for answers, short of admitting he did not know, but she suddenly fiddled with her shawl as if she had forgotten him.
Sometimes Giotto makes for very great jokes. I would laugh my sides apart if I were not the butt of this one.
Her voice dropped to a whisper.
I will meet my toe.
He thought she was talking to herself, but he answered. Carefully. If you mean about Lanfear, it wasn't me who saved you. Moraine did. She died saving all of us. Layman's sword had rid her of her only other toe to him, though he had never been able to understand what that was. The only obligation she knew. He prayed she never learned of the other. She would see it as one, though certainly he did not. Avienda peered at him, head tilted and a slight smile flickering on her lips. She had regained a self-possession that would have done Soralia proud.
Thank you, Randolthor. Bear says it is well to be reminded now and then that a man does not know everything. Be sure to let me know when you mean to go to sleep. I would not come late and wake you.
Rand sat there staring at the door after she had gone. A Kyrianen playing the game of houses was usually easier to understand than any woman making no effort to be enigmatic at all. He suspected that what he felt for Avienda, whatever that was, tangled things up worse.
What I love, I destroy, Luz Theron laughed. What I destroy, I love.
Shut up! Rand thought furiously, and the thin-edged laughter vanished. He did not know who he loved, but he knew who he was going to save. From whatever he could. But from him, most of all.
In the hallway, Avienda sagged against the door, taking deep, calming breaths. Meant to be calming, anyway. Her heart still tried to tear through her ribcage. Being near Randall Thor stretched her naked over hot coals, stretched her till she thought her bones would pop apart. He brought such shame to her as she had never thought she would know. A great joke, she had told him, and part of her did want to laugh. She had toe toward him, but much more toward Elaine. All he had done was save her life. Lanfear would have killed her without him. Lanfear had wanted to kill her in particular, as painfully as possible. Somehow Lanfear had known. Beside what she had incurred toward Elaine, her toe toward Rand was a termite mound beside the spine of the world. Cassin, the cut of his coat, told her he was Goshian as well as Ethan Dorr. She did not recognize his sept, merely glanced at her from where he squatted with his spears across his knees. He knew nothing, of course. But Leah smiled at her, entirely too encouraging for a woman she did not know, entirely too knowingly for anyone. Avienda was shocked to find herself thinking that Charin, as Leah's coat marked her, were often sneaking cats. She had never thought of any maiden as anything but Far Dari Smai. Rand Althor had unstrung her brain. Still her fingers flashed angrily. "Why do you smile, girl? Have you no better use for your time?" Leah's eyebrows raised slightly, and if anything her smile became amused. Her fingers moved in answer. "Who do you call girl, girl? You are not yet wise, but no longer maiden. I think you will put your soul in a wreath to lay at a man's feet." Avienda took a furious step forward. There were few insults worse among Far Dari Smai, then stopped. In cut-in sores she did not think Leah could match her, but in skirts she would be defeated. Worse, Leah would probably refuse to make her guy shine. She could, attacked by a woman who was not a maiden and not yet a wise one, or demand the right to beat Avienda before any of the Tardad who could be gathered. A lesser shame than the refusal, but not small. Worst of all, whether she won or lost, Milane surely would choose a method to remind her she had left the spear behind that would make her wish Leah had drubbed her 10 times before all the clans. In a wise one's hands, shame was keener than a flaying knife. Leah never moved a muscle. She knew all that as well as Avienda did. "Now you stare at one another," Cassin said idly. "One day I must learn this hand talk of yours." Leah glanced at him, her laugh silvery. "You will look pretty in skirts, red shield, the day you come to ask to become a maiden." Avienda drew a relieved breath when Leah's eyes left hers. Under the circumstances, she could not have looked away first, honorably. Automatically, her fingers moved in acknowledgement, the first hand talk a maiden learned, since the phrase a new maiden used most often. "I have toe." Leah signed back without pause. "Very small, spear sister." Avienda smiled gratefully for the missing hooked little finger that would have made the term mocking, used to women who gave up the spear and then tried to behave as if they had not. A Wetlander servant was running up the hall. Keeping her face clear of the disgust she felt for someone who spent his life serving others, Avienda strode off the other way, so she would not have to pass the fellow. Killing Rand Althor would meet one toe, killing herself the second. But each toe blocked that solution to the other. Whatever the wise one said, she had to find some way to meet both.